Welcome to Side Hustle City, and thanks for joining us. Our goal is to help you connect to real people who found success turning their side hustle into a main hustle, and we hope you can too. I'm Adam Kaler. I'm joined by Kyle Stevie, my co-host. Let's get started. All right, welcome back, everybody, to the Side Hustle City podcast, and as always, we've got the trusty co-host, Kyle Stevie. He's not here. So where are you at now, Kyle?
I am by Independence, Kentucky, I guess. Yeah, Independence, Kentucky.
So he's driving. He's remote.
Driving to my daughter's camp.
Oh, okay. There you go. Your side hustle that doesn't pay you anything. That's what that's all about.
Day four in a row of kids games. I had to drive to Portsmouth to watch Elijah play in his second college game. And within 4 minutes in the second half, he had a yellow card. Three more fouls called on him and a red card.
Well, you were proud of that red card.
That's awesome.
Well, we're joined today by Slocum Reed, a buddy of yours, right, Kyle?
Yes, sir.
So, Slocum, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So we were talking a little bit before this. So you're not local to Cincinnati or Northern Kentucky?
I am, yes. I live in Northside now. Moved to Cincinnati just over 10 years ago.
Okay, where'd you come from?
Yeah, grew up mostly in, moved all over the place. Grew up mostly in Ohio, primarily in Springfield, Ohio, up on I-70 east of Dayton.
Oh, cool. My cousin's your state rep, Kyle Kaler.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, in Springfield. Yeah, a bunch of my family members came from there.
Gotcha.
Yeah, nice. Because we're all kind of sprouted out of there somehow. I don't know. And then some of us moved down here where it's awesome. So, yes, Slocum, so you're a jack of all trades kind of when it comes to side hustles. At least you tried a lot of things, not all of them stuck. But you were telling us a little bit before. I mean, you were talking about going down to the casino and making money down there, and you were doing all kinds of things to try to make some little money.
Yeah, so I finally came across a side hustle that became a main hustle, and that's real estate. But yeah, you know, when they opened the casino downtown, back when it was a Hollywood casino, I had played a lot of poker online back when that was legal in college. And so I was looking, I was saying before, you know, my wife and I were recently married. This would be 2013. She was in publishing. I was working in youth ministry at a church. And I was looking to bridge the gap of our incomes so that I'd be contributing equally to our family, our new family. And so I was just looking for something that would be good money on the side. I tried playing poker, and, you know, like tracking my hours, tracking my profitability, coming up with like a dollars per hour figure for my time over time, reading books, you know, studying not only poker strategy, but bankroll strategy. How do you know which games you should be playing and how much money you should be playing for, when to cut yourself off, things like that. Also drove for Uber and Lyft back when they first came to Cincinnati. Early on in like 2014, 2015, I could drive nights and weekends and make $35 an hour. Now, of course, that doesn't account for the wear and tear on my vehicle or anything like that, but $35 an hour for basically no skills, but having a Prius and being able to drive it is pretty good. I quit Uber when overnight they changed their policies and cut how much I was making in half.
Whoa.
And I believe there's more money in driving for Lyft and Uber now than there used to be. But when it went from like 35 to 17 an hour, you know, when you're at home exhausted on the couch, scrolling through all of your rides, figuring out how much you made, that 17 just doesn't feel, it's just not as worthwhile.
Yeah, I hear you on that. Yeah. So now, go ahead.
What makes a youth minister pick up gambling as a side hustle?
First answer is how much they pay youth ministers is what makes them need a side hustle. Why gambling? That's a great question. And I'll tell you, Kyle, that's actually part of the reason that I stopped playing. I'm a pretty sociable guy and I'd get to know the people at the table and then I'd absolutely smoke one of them. I'd bluff him. I'd show it. He'd go on tilt. And this is a guy who I just spent the last 2 hours getting to know, telling me about his wife and his newborn kid. And then I take all his money and he gets furious and leaves. And I just didn't, something didn't feel right about that. Made money, but it didn't last all that long. Yeah. So, the side hustle to end all side hustles for me was actually real estate investing. I have finally got a hold of, I had done a couple of other things. I was in a direct sales network marketing business. I learned a ton. I was going to a lot of leadership and business seminars, learning sales skills, leadership skills, how to run a business. And a lot of that translated really well to real estate. But when I finally read Rich Dad Poor Dad in 2013, the way a lot of real estate investors are going to say that they have, it lit a fire under me. And when I read some more books from Robert Kiyosaki's Rich Dad Company, and I learned more about real estate, and I learned, you know, I learned about what we now call house hacking, that you can buy and owner occupy a multifamily, like 2 to 4 units, buy it on an FHA loan with 3.5% down. At least back then, you could get the seller to pay your closing costs. So your out of pocket is minimal. And here you have what was for us a great place to live, but also three sources of income in apartments that other people are renting from us. That easily did more for our personal finances than any sort of dollars per hour hustle that I could get that would work for me that I was qualified for. And it took less time. It took so much less time that I went back to driving for Uber, having a second side hustle to fill some more time and make some more money, because owning and managing and living in a 4-family didn't take nearly as much time as a part-time or even quarter-time job would.
What was your education? Like, what was your background before you started all this stuff?
Yeah, so I went to Emory University in Atlanta, and my degree is in philosophy and Spanish. Philosophy because I thought it was interesting, and Spanish because I thought I needed an employable skill. I was on track actually to become a priest when I found real estate, and that became my career. I was younger and more narrow-minded then than I am now, but also, you know, I was working as a professional youth minister at the time and on that track. That's not something that I've necessarily put in my past. I'm still involved in church life, but that's not my career, at least not at the moment.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. That's actually a very noble path to go down. You don't hear a lot of, you know, every time I go to mass, they're like, we need more priests. We need more priests. If you know anybody who wants to be a priest, let them know. I mean, it's tough. I mean, it sounds like you're married with kids and everything now, but
yeah,
you know, I got a friend, he actually married us. My wife and I actually got married to the Vatican in Rome, and the archdiocese is a client of mine. And, they were able to find a priest who's awesome. Young guy, got his, he's actually an attorney. And he went to law school at Notre Dame under Amy Coney Barrett.
Of course he did.
Yeah. Coney Barrett, who's the, you know, a chief justice now, Supreme Court justice. And he said, you know, she was the smartest person he ever met. But the guy is awesome. Young guy, couldn't love it more than, you know, you see the passion. He teaches at the Athenaeum now, teaches other priests. But yeah, he got his doctorate in Rome. He got to see the world and you know, study theology, and, you know, he's got a doctorate in theology now. You know, but it's really interesting when you can devote yourself to something like that, and it's very noble. So yeah, that's awesome. You were considering it though.
Yeah, it doesn't make for a very good side hustle.
Nah, you got to take it.
It's got to be a main hustle.
There's that vow of poverty you got to take, and vow of chastity.
Chastity, thanks.
It's a rough go. But hey, man, if you want to just completely turn yourself over to the church, then, you know, you don't really have a whole lot you have to worry about every day but praying. So But yeah, man. So you get into this real estate thing. A lot of people, and we've had people on the show, Kyle, you know, I'd say a third of the people we've had on here have something to do with real estate. And I feel like as somebody who grew up in kind of like, you know, troubled, you know, I had a troubled youth. I had, you know, we lived in poverty. Real estate is actually probably one of the best ways for people to get out of poverty, I would think. And also a really good.
I'd like to,
go ahead, Kyle.
I would like to add that the reason that we're having so many people that have a background in real estate is that most of our guests are coming out of the same group, like Osh and Slocum and John Caspin and all of us. We are all part of Joe Fairless. We're all like the same kind of network. Apparently we play poker together. We don't necessarily all do business together, but that's some people that it's all, I got like a group of 15 guys that I can bounce ideas off of if I need to. And I think that's a cool part about real estate too. If you don't really have any experience in it, is the fact that it's a matter of bringing value to a network in some way, somehow. So that's why I think it's an extremely valuable side hustle, because hey, you get, you know, the tax benefits are awesome. You've got the residual income, really passive income, kind of, but you still got to be active with the property. But the network is what makes it so great. You can fit, you get in with a lot of these guys.
Are you tired of feeling lost in the world of trading and investing? Get informed and inspired with the Talking Trading podcast. I'm Louise Bedford, and I'll help you navigate the markets like a pro. Tune in each week and subscribe now at talkingtrading.com.au or on your favourite podcast app, or check out the link in the show notes. Talking Trading, this is how traders excel.
Yeah, real estate really is a people business. It's easy to get caught up in the big numbers, the property values, and it's really easy to get paralyzed by everything going on in a spreadsheet about the potential performance of a property, all of your speculation, your analysis and the formulas. But at the end of the day, it's really a people business, and it's about figuring out the best way for you to add value to people, whether that's, you know, the people that you hang out with at a poker game who are talking about the deals that they're doing, or your tenants, or the people who are going to buy a house that you're flipping, or the contractors who are working for you, or the people that you employ. It's still a people business, and it's about figuring out the best way to add value to others through real estate.
Well, talk to us too about some of the things, if you wanted to get started in real estate, what are some of the things people need to think about? Credit? Do you have to have money laying around? Do you have to have a good relationship with a bank? Like, what are some of the things that people, do you have to have a high salary? Like, what are some of the things people need to think about?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I'm talking to someone about becoming a real estate investor, I don't know if I've said this since you started recording, I am the director of investment services for the Chabris Group of Keller Williams, the largest selling residential real estate sales team in the city by number of homes sold, number of properties sold. When I am talking to someone about becoming a new investor, I want to know, typically they are thinking about a time in the future when they want their lifestyle or at least their personal finances to look radically different than they do now. And so to answer that question, what do you need to start investing in real estate? The first thing you need to know is your goals, and you need to know you want your life to be different. How soon are you trying to make your life different? For example, I have a 2-year-old daughter at home. Am I trying to create more time to be with my family now, or am I planning for when she's going to college and how I'm going to pay for it? My wife is crazy smart. My daughter is going to be crazy smart. She's going to get into really expensive schools. So is it, if I'm thinking about 15 years from now, or 20, 30 years from now when I'm looking at retirement, and I don't have a career that has given me a nice hefty IRA or 401k or company match retirement plan. If that's what you're looking for and you're not looking for something that's going to be too active now, then your borrowability is essential. You need to be saving money so that you can invest it the way that you would invest it in anything else. And you do need to be thinking about having adequate credit. You should also think about your debt to income ratios. So your car loans are acting against your ability to get mortgages, as well as student loans, credit cards, things that we talk about. But any debt you have that has to be repaid over time, or minimum payments on a credit card, those are things that you need to be monitoring to keep your debt down. And save money and find good places where you feel confident speculating on appreciation and rent growth over time. If you're looking for something, if you hate your job and your boss drives you crazy and you don't want to have a boss again, then you need to be doing more transactional investing. You need to be doing things that put money in the bank now. So like house flipping or wholesaling, or become a real estate agent and you can, you know, join a team and get access to incredible training and mentorship and leads for clients. Or you can go it totally on your own, which is tougher, but you keep more of the commission and you have that independence if that's what you're looking for. But if you want a drastic change now, the most important thing you can do is study. Network with people like Kyle was mentioning earlier. There are free local meetups full of real estate investors who love talking to newbies and giving advice. People in real estate are very willing to lift the hood on their own business and talk about their own numbers and talk about times when they lost money and the mistakes that they've made that you should avoid. If you want to change your finances drastically now, you need to study, you need to network, and you need to hustle. There's going to be a lot of legwork involved. It's not going to be passive. It is likely going to become a career for you quickly, the way that it did for me. We bought our first house hack in February of 2014. By the end of 2014, I had my license. I'd read stupid lots of books. I had found Bigger Pockets and started listening to the Bigger Pockets podcast and getting in the forums. And I was a full-time real estate agent by the summer of 2015.
Wow. So you've been doing this. So you've been a real estate agent since 2015. So you've got income from being a real estate agent. You're in this group with Peter Chablis, right?
Peter Chablis, yes.
Chablis. So you're in.
Happens to him all the time.
Yeah. So you're in this real estate group. Is that an actual job, or is that just part of being like you're a real estate agent with him?
Yes. So speaking specific to me as the director of investment services, I am one step removed from the actual investor clients we have who are looking to primarily buy investment property in the Cincinnati area. I am supervising the agents who work with them directly and supporting with analysis, strategy, negotiation. Does a property not only make sense with its physical condition and is it aesthetically pleasing, but is it going to perform financially the way that our client is interested in? That is on a 1099 basis, but it is much more like a job. For someone who's thinking about becoming a real estate agent, if you want it to be totally freeform and independent and you want to feel like a business owner and an entrepreneur, then you still need to find a brokerage that can provide great training and support, but you're going to want to be an independent agent. The ability to set your own hours, you know, work 60 hours for yourself instead of 40 hours for somebody else, and have that kind of control. If you want to get into real estate as a career change, and you want more structure, more guidance, more mentorship, less necessarily risk and fewer ebbs and flows in your income, because you're doing more transactions, even though you're making less on each transaction, then finding a really good, strong team is a good way to do it. And those teams may have hours that they expect you to be in the office doing your follow-up, doing your lead generation. That'll feel more like a job, even though it pays like you're self-employed. And I mean that in a positive way, that you eat what you kill. It's still on you to build your business, but you have an infrastructure within which you can, within which you can build that business. And so long as you've got a great team, your infrastructure is strong, you're going to be in a good position for success.
Wow. So what kind of, how many sources of income would you say you have now?
Yeah. So depending on how you count, you could either say it's around 50 or it is three. By 50, I mean all of the, each unit, each apartment, individually, each Airbnb is a source of income. And you have to think about it that way, especially when you have a vacancy, because vacancy is the number one killer of profits, especially when you have something else going on. And especially when real estate is your side hustle, it's so easy to ignore an apartment being vacant because the amount of time it'll take you to get that $900 a month coming back in, you know, you could go make $2,000 with those same hours, but you're only going to make that $2,000 once. And that 900 a month is going to be coming in steadily every month. My personal income now comes from owning and managing my own rental portfolio. It comes from commissions from sales transactions, both my personal clients and the clients of the Chabris Group that I assist with their, I assist our agents with representing those investors. And then I do some transactional investing, some wholesaling, and I got a couple flips going on right now too.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And you've got, so you're doing flips, you're doing regular rental, long-term rental, and you're doing Airbnb also. Talk a little bit about the Airbnb stuff.
Yeah. So the biggest, if for someone who's already a landlord, Airbnb is a totally different ball game. It's not property management. It's not landlording. It's hospitality. And it's much more involved. If you look at an apartment, for example, I have some downtown in the West End, really close to Washington Park. If you look at an apartment and how much money can be made with getting a long-term tenant, stable, paying a good rent for a great place to live, there's good income there. The amount of cash flow or profit off of that apartment can triple or quadruple if you turn it into an Airbnb in the right neighborhood around Cincinnati or any metro area. The amount of time involved in it, though, increases proportionally or maybe even more so. You are being rated and reviewed by everyone who stays in your place. A lot of them are very picky, and you have to come correct as an Airbnb host, because, you know, a 3-star review, especially early on, can be way more crippling for a host than most guests suspect because of the high expectations that Airbnb has of their hosts. So arranging for cleaning the units, if you're not doing it yourself, is probably the most complicated and difficult thing to do. Having little amenities, like my Airbnbs right now, we're doing breakfast to go. We want it to be really easy to roll out of bed, take a shower, and go to likely work for the people who are staying at my places. It's much more hands-on, and it's much more customer service oriented than being a landlord. The income is there, though, for sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I've just, recently I purchased it's a pre-construction condo in downtown Miami, and it's the first building in Miami being built specifically for investors. So half of the building is like hotel and restaurants and amenities. Wow. And the other half is all investor units. And, you know, they come with their own owner closet and all that good stuff. But the entire building has a hotel license.
And and it's the chairman of the board of Norwegian Cruise Lines is the one who's developing it. And you walk out the front door and the Port of Miami's right there. So you could hop on a cruise ship right afterwards. So
that's awesome.
When you think about that, it's a theme, right? There's a purpose for it. It's there because, you know, people are going to want to get on cruise ships and they need to stay somewhere the night before they get on a cruise ship. And they were thinking, hey, if we build this thing right across the street from where you get on the cruise ships at, it's going to stay busy. It's going to make money. So I think when you're doing Airbnb, you have to think of like, what is the opportunity, where I'm at? What city am I in? What's the big thing here? If I'm in Nashville, maybe I got a music theme, right? If I'm in, Pigeon Forge, you know, maybe it's some Dollywood stuff going on or whatever at my place. But you got to understand who your market is, college campuses, close to college campuses for parents and stuff that are visiting their kids, that may be an opportunity for some people. What have you found success with? What kind of group or demographic when it comes to Airbnb have you found success with?
One of the reasons I jumped into Airbnb was that my first two properties, a four family and a three family, they were both downtown. And so I had, because of the core of entertainment that Cincinnati has downtown with sporting events, the Duke Energy Convention Center, all of the revitalization of Over the Rhine, almost all of the trendy bars, restaurants, shops are within a half mile of my two buildings down there. My expectation was that that's who I would attract and that has been, that has been a lot of the people that we've gotten at my Airbnbs downtown. More generally speaking, in Cincinnati, there are really three major short-term rental attractions. Number one is actually the hospitals. Right now, during the COVID pandemic, it's a lot of people like traveling nurses, but also, especially for the last several years, it's people who have kids at Children's and they need a place to stay, or people who are visiting someone at one of the hospitals in the Clifton area. You have entertainment downtown, so sporting events, concerts, people who just want a fun place to go for the weekend. There is, downtown Cincinnati is becoming a more of a tourist attraction for people who live in Indiana, Ohio, West Virginia, Kentucky, and Tennessee because of the revitalization that we've seen of the urban core. You have some people who are still traveling for work, not so much now. Duke Energy Convention Center hasn't had a convention, and I can't tell you how long because of COVID. But the other thing that I always hear, especially from the people I know who do Airbnb in Northern Kentucky, is the Creation Museum, the Ark Encounter, and then, of course, Kings Island to the north. Those are big pulls for short-term rentals.
Wow. So are there a lot of people in like the Lebanon area and stuff, or maybe not Lebanon, but like Fields Hurdle, like Mason area that are doing Airbnb?
My personal network is much larger south of there. But there are people who I know who in like Loveland and Silverton who have people who are coming in to go to Kings Island or Great Wolf Lodge. And then I know people who have Airbnbs in Covington that are going to Creation Museum and the Ark Encounter. Another thing is it depends on what kind of property or unit you are doing with short-term rental. Mine are small studio apartments, one bedrooms. I'm about to put some two bedrooms on Airbnb here soon, but that's a very different feel from a four bedroom house that sleeps 10. With a four bedroom house that sleeps 10, those owners will tell you, you have to screen out the partiers who are going to trash the place and piss off your neighbors. But you will find that there are a lot of families, or if it sleeps 10, you'll get two families that want to stay together and go to some of those more kid-friendly attractions.
Interesting. So yeah, my wife's been trying to coax me to buy a Airbnb house down in Orlando, and she gets on YouTube and she sits here and she watches these shows And, you know, Orlando is like one of the most traveled cities in the world. I think it might be the most traveled city in the world, or the most visited city in the world. But now the developers are starting to build themed rooms. And you go to these rooms and it'll be like Nintendo or Pirates of the Caribbean or whatever. And they are literally built out like you think you're at Disney World. Like the quality of what they do in these rooms, and there'll be little nooks the kids will go through, and they'll go into another room, and the whole room will look like a pirate ship. It's insane. But it's like the developers have started to pick up on why a lot of these people are actually buying down there and theme these places, almost like if you're going down there for Disney, the home itself is like a Disney getaway. So I don't know if you, do you see anything like that ever happening in Cincinnati? Is there a need for any kind of theming here, or, you know, in any other kind of city, or is it mainly just places like that?
I think part of it with Orlando and Disney and Universal, part of it is the people who are traveling there are already expecting to spend way more money than they're going to spend when they come to Cincinnati. And so I don't know that there is that much of an appetite for the kind of price that those will command in Orlando. I don't know that there is an appetite for that in Cincinnati tourism. One of the reasons people are coming here instead of going to Orlando or Chicago or New York is because it's more convenient and it's more affordable. Specific to my Airbnb experience, I'm looking for people who want a nice place to crash in a convenient location. And they're not going to pay the premium that I would have to command if I put those kinds of resources into creating that kind of theme. I know when Airbnb was first kicking off and it was more of a niche product, the early adopters were doing things like that to gain awareness. I don't know that that's really what's happening in Cincinnati, though.
Yeah, I just know it's very competitive. And, you know, downtown, I mean, I remember when nobody wanted to be downtown. I went to school for the Great Performing Arts from like 88 to 95, when it was like a war zone, right? And people would tell their kids, never go downtown. Well, here I am rolling in the metro from Price Hill to downtown and jumping off the metro. And, you know, I pretty much, it was my second neighborhood, really. And, you know, it still blows my mind the way downtown has transformed. I mean, it literally went from the most dangerous neighborhood in America to a place that's people want to freaking go and stay at an Airbnb at. It's like amazing to me. So, you know,
it's not just downtown either, though. It's Covington, it's Newport, it's everything along the river. So for the first 16 years I was alive, being within a mile of the river, there wasn't shit. Everything was out. You know, everything that you wanted, you didn't do anything in downtown if it wasn't a Redskins. And then all of a sudden, you know, Main Street blew up for a little while, and then the riots happened and that died down. And then, you know, they've had Mount Adams in downtown, but people have started to go, more and more people were going into Cincinnati. And then when 3CDC did their thing, I mean, it's incredible how much just a little bit of investment in a small little area, a small little pocket of a community, and fixing a park turned that whole area around. Just completely. Complete mind shift from what it like. You wouldn't even. It's hard to remember the downtown when you were growing up, and you had to worry about getting to the bus without getting the crap beat out of you for some money or your gym shoes. Now it's like people go there and they've got the perfectly faded beard and fades right into their hair, and they're wearing skinny jeans and flannels and all that other stuff. It's just a different world. You're right. It's crazy how much the whole river scene has changed across Northern Kentucky and Cincinnati.
When if people aren't from Cincinnati and you're listening to this podcast, I mean, there's a lot of cities I feel like that are going through the same kind of transformation, maybe not to the extreme that Cincinnati's going through it. But, you know, one thing that's also changed are the prices down there. I mean, I literally remember some of my friends that I went to high school with, they were on, you know, Section 8 or they were on, you know, some sort of public housing thing. And their mom was paying $50 a month to live downtown. Now you probably can't find an apartment down there for less than $2,400 a month. And, you know, I almost in a way refuse to pay for a place down there because I'm like, I just can't get myself to pay $450,000, $500,000 for a one or two bedroom condo when I know what people were paying back in the day. It's just my cheapness just won't let me do it. So Slocum, like you said, you got a couple places downtown. Were those places you bought retail? Were those deals that you found and you had to go in and do some rehab? Like, how did that work out?
Those purchases were very well timed. So the first one, our house hack, we got it under contract in the fall of 2013. But for a variety of reasons, primarily the seller's reasons, we couldn't close until February of 2014. 3CDC reopened Washington Park in the spring of 2014. And so no one really knew what was going to happen in Over the Rhine until right after we bought a property two blocks off of Washington Park. I mean, talk about lucky. I wasn't in real estate. I didn't understand what was going on enough to make a smart move buying that building. It was a lucky move for sure. The second one was in 2016. It was off market and the place was a total dump. So I ended up putting almost as much into it as I paid for it just to get it livable and nice.
Yeah, people don't understand the drop-in center used to be right where your place is or around where your place is.
Yeah.
And if people don't know what the drop-in center is. It's like, it used to be a big shelter essentially for homeless people. And that's what used to be down there. And then the park across the street from it would be where if you didn't make it to the drop-in center in time, or if you were high or you were crazy and they didn't let you in, you just slept on the park bench and shot up outside.
And now literally they bulldozed the drop-in center to create the new Shakespeare Theater.
Yep.
That's what's happened. That's a great microcosm of what's happened all over the Rhine.
It's funny too. I had to write a letter. A buddy of mine actually was the one who developed that. And he was the president of the Shakespeare Company. And I went to the School for the Creative and Performing Arts, which is right across the street from that. But I went to the old one that used to have asbestos floating around in the air. So, but this new one is beautiful. And they were like, hey, Adam, you know, you would dot loop and you did some things and, you know, you went to SCPA. Could you write a nice little letter for us? And so, of course, I did, because back when I was young, if we wanted to go to music hall or we wanted to go see any, you know, instead, it's a school for the creative performing arts. Instead of going to Kings Island and the zoo and all that cool stuff that like other kids did, we went to the symphony, we went to the ballet, we did arts and cultural things. So we used to have to walk from Sycamore at the old SCPA building all the way through Over the Rhine through Washington Park to get to music hall, right? So it's like this little group of kids walking past, like crackheads passed out on the sidewalk and, you know, needles on the ground and, you know, people doing heroin deals right in front of you. It was super interesting. And here you are with a condo or house or whatever down there.
Geographically speaking, that's not that long of a walk from the old SCPA to Music Hall. It's just all the stuff you had to walk through back then that made it feel so risky.
Oh, yeah. You didn't want to be in the back of that line, like trailing off, like, who knows what would happen, you know? And it's,
hey, I have a question I have to ask you guys on the record, because I know you're both Northern Kentucky guys. I am a big fan of burgers, cheeseburgers. Is there a burger in Northern Kentucky better than Wonder Bar?
I think Midway in Fort Thomas is really good.
I've had that one. I'll try it again.
It might be my hometown bias, but I really like it.
See, I'm a West Side guy. I'm Price Hill guy. So I'm in Covington now, but you know, things are pretty new here. Like restaurants are pretty new here. There's a lot of Hispanic places that are awesome here. But not a lot of burger places down here. You know what? The Coppin's Burger have you had that? Ooh. In Hotel Covington?
That's a pretty good burger.
I'm a fan of Hotel Covington for sure.
Yeah, the patty melt down there is pretty good too, if they still got that. But the Coppin's Burger, I really like the Coppin's Burger. That's good.
Well, guys, I got to jump off to go watch Char play.
Slocum, I really appreciate it, man. Yeah, thanks for your time. Thanks for coming on. We'll have to catch up after this, and hopefully people learned a lot. You inspired some people, you know. I mean, coming from nothing, you know, down there hustling at cards to, you know, having 50 streams income. Congratulations, sir.
Well, thank you very much, Adam, Kyle. It's been a pleasure.
Awesome, man.
Like I said, like I said, now it completely makes absolute effing sense why every time I'm at the table at one of these stupid poker games with Slocum, I'm now at the table with Slocum for very long. And he can say what he wants about, like, feeling bad about taking money from the guy that he talked to for 2 hours. He still gives a smile when he knocks you out. He just waits.
Yeah, it's different now. It's different now. It's a bragging rights thing now.
Was Kyle the guy who was telling you about his kids and stuff and that you felt bad about taking his money? Was that what that was?
Kyle brought his son last time. That was a good game.
Oh, for pity. That was a lot of fun. Yeah. For pity. Oh, yeah. I'm going to have to pay for this kid's college. Oh,
I do believe he outplayed you too, Kyle. Didn't he last longer in that tournament than you did?
Yeah, it was his first game ever too. I had to teach him how to shuffle cards like 3 days before the tournament. I said, you got to go to meet all these guys. And then I looked up and he's still playing. I'm like, and I was like, what in the hell is going on? Yeah, I suck. He's good. I'm not. Slocum's awesome.
Well, Slocum, I appreciate it, man. Don't, don't cause Kyle too much pain at the next poker game.
Yeah, well.
Give him an extra half an hour. Extra half an hour. 15 minutes, half an hour. Just let him know he's in it, you know?
Good to keep. He's a good guy to keep around for a while.
Yes. There you go. There you go.
See you guys.
All right, guys. See you later. Thanks, Slocum.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on this week's episode of Side Hustle City. Well, you've heard from our guests. Now let's hear from you. Join our community on Facebook, Side Hustle City. It's a group where people share ideas, share their inspirational stories, and motivate each other to be successful and turn their side hustle into their main hustle. We'll see you there, and we'll see you next week on the show. Thank you.